This is the Empower Podcast, released November 8th, 2020. Episode 516, Thermions Aren't a Thing.
Welcome to the Amp Hour. I'm Dave Jones from the EEV blog.
And I'm Chris Gamble of Contextual Electronics.
What's up, nerd?
Oh, you know, some stuff in the US.
Don't know what you're talking about. No idea.
I know.
Yeah.
It's almost over. We'll see.
Excellent. All right. Let's talk some electronics, shall we?
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. I have been diving into work to try and distract myself. And luckily, it has been bountiful. So lots of work to do.
Yep.
I don't know if I've mentioned on the show before, but I've been working on like Nordic parts a bunch. Maybe I've mentioned it.
I'm sure you've mentioned it.
Yeah. So I do have one. I have a Nordic part on the ABC board, which is that board I made for the course. And that's the cellular board.
Yep.
But then I've been working on it a little bit otherwise for like, you know, one other project and then a client project and whatever else. What's interesting is like, I've been, I finally got like the Bluetooth bootloading to work.
Yep.
Have you ever done that? Did you do that with the meter? I have your meter here, but I don't know if it loads firmware over the Bluetooth.
No, it doesn't. No, we deliberately didn't do that because it was exceedingly hard, they said, to do anything over the Bluetooth like that. So, yep.
Oh, okay.
Unfortunately. Yes, it was... originally, yes, we wanted to do load the firmware over the Bluetooth and also upload from the SD card as well from Bluetooth. And you could have actually almost tied those two together, but it was, they just deemed it, no. It was like, it's not worth our effort. It's not worth our time investment in that. So
I would actually say it is worth it. So like I have been shocked at how interesting it is to have that capability now. Because now I can like ship off firmware to someone and it's literally like, hey, open this app, upload it, you're good to go. It blinks a little bit and then it's like...
Yeah, but we already had an SD card in the product. SD card firmware uploading, so...
I'm not questioning the practice. I'm just saying that like...
Oh, no, of course. There's benefits.
I have found it to be very interestingly...
Yes.
It's like very different for me because like, you know, people that do regular software updates things and like have bootloader chains that are... very well known, like they're like, yeah, of course you do that, but like for me it's very different. I think the big downside is that it just takes up a lot more memory, you know, so like,
oh yeah, it does.
Yeah So it's like I've got like the 512k part and like a bunch of that, so I think like maybe like 60k of that is the actual like Bluetooth like soft device because it's a Nordic part, and then you know, and then you have to have pretty much like double the rest of that. So like basically like I have like 440, I think, available, 440K available. You can only really build it into like 220. You only get about 200K for your actual program then. So
right.
Luckily, I write very simple programs.
Jeez, when I was a boy, I have to link in my 1K video of what you can do in 1K, you know. You remember the 1K contest, you know?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
And but the thing is, a lot of parts, I don't know about the Nordic ones, a lot of parts will only have a limited, they'll have like a separate segregated safe area of bootloader memory, and that will be limited. It might be, you know, 2K or something like that, you know. It might be a limited, like you can't just extend it to...
For the bootloader itself, you mean?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. The bootloader is like at the top of the memory stack.
Oh, so you're saying don't put the Bluetooth routines in the... No, but it has to be in the bootloader, so it's fully protected. So even if you goof it up completely, you can still recover via the Bluetooth. So it's all got to be in that protected memory space.
You mean the actual Bluetooth capability?
Yes, the Bluetooth.
No, because like, the Bluetooth stuff is like weird. So like Nordic does it where it's like a binary basically, and I mean they're all binaries, but basically it's like there's an API to this like this just chunk of memory, and like so basically you have to like preserve part of your flash and part of your RAM, and it's just going to run out of there. And people who know more about this stuff are just laughing at me right now. That's fine.
Yeah, right, of course.
But basically, that's kind of like the bottom part. So that's like basically like
0x0 to like 0x2600 or 26,000. And so like, that's basically just what the soft device is. And it's like basically every function that's in that you might want to use on the Bluetooth side of things, it's in there. And then the bootloader is actually at the very, very top of the memory. So like, whatever the, you know.
Yeah, but both of those have to be, both of those have to be protected memory spaces. Otherwise, you're going to come a gutzer.
Yes, that's right. Yeah, I agree.
And well, that's what I'm saying. Some processors only have that a small amount of protected memory space.
Oh,
so you,
I see.
Like, okay. You would not be able to fit Bluetooth in there.
Got so, it. Yeah. And that is, it is a big Bluetooth thingy in there. Like that soft device is.
Oh yeah, it's a large. Yeah, it's a large build. Yeah.
Because it's basically like it's all or nothing. You basically use all you know. You put in everything in the kitchen sink that Nordic offers you, or nothing.
Yep.
And so. I'm still getting my head around it, but like in the Zephyr stuff that I've been doing, it's like, I think it's more selective on the build because the idea is like, I think they didn't want people to mess it up during the build, but I think they also didn't want to show their source code in the old way of doing things for Nordic. But like now I think there's actually like the whole stack is in there and available and like you can selectively build what's in there. So you could shrink it down if you needed less stuff.
Okay.
I think.
Got it.
So yeah, it's interesting though. And so like, but now basically I just, I have to like package up the firmware that I make then is like basically just offset. So it starts at the beginning of basically at the end, sorry, it starts at the end of the Bluetooth memory area. And then it just runs like a normal program. So
yep,
it's super cool. Firmware, Dave, who knew?
One of the reasons also that we didn't do it in the multimeter is because we, ours wasn't a Bluetooth chipset. It was Bluetooth LE, which is actually quite a different beast. Bluetooth LE is much harder and much more inflexible. Much less flexible than normal Bluetooth. So, yeah, just beware. Like Bluetooth LE does not support serial ports over Bluetooth, for example. You know, you've got to kludge it. If you want to do that, you really have to kludge it.
Yeah, I don't know about that yet, but that is a...
You don't want to know. It's awful.
Yeah, you're saying because it's like low power and it would not be able to stream stuff back. Is that kind of the thinking?
Yeah, and it's designed to be, ultra low power. Like Bluetooth is pretty low power, right? But Bluetooth LE is, you know, yet another level down, so.
Yeah, so I'm still learning a lot of it, to be honest. But I'm very excited about it. It's cool stuff. And like I said, the ability to like just kind of push updates is real nice. So
right. So yes, my pro tip there is don't use Bluetooth LE unless you absolutely have to use normal Bluetooth. So
I don't agree with that.
No, trust me. Yes. It's a long, hard, expensive lesson learned, I can assure you. Bluetooth LE.
You guys used a module or you used a chip?
Yeah, we used a module. Oh god, it was the 112. What is it? The BLE 112? Am I right? Jeez, I can't remember. It's scarring.
Silicon Labs.
Yes, that's the Silicon Labs BLE 112.
The latest it's Bluetooth 5, it says.
I think. Anyway.
So you guys just using, you were talking to it over another micro though, right? So like you have like STM32 on board and then you just kind of throw serial commands at this thing?
Yep.
Okay.
But cool. It wasn't that easy. Because as I said.
Well, it sounds like it was not easy.
Bluetooth LE does not support proper serial implementation. We thought it did. And that's why we spent a huge amount of time, money and effort trying to get it working. And it's a real kludge in the end.
Yeah.
You can get it to do it, but geez, you know,
yeah,
it's just not as easy as it is on normal Bluetooth.
Got it.
Yep.
Yeah. Isn't it crazy when some of those, so like, you know, now thinking about it now, you know, that like you would go back and tell yourself like, oh, well, look a little closer at that serial side of things. That's really going to be important, right?
We just took it for granted.
Well, but I mean, that happens all the time in designs. And like some things, it's fine, right? It's like, it's a software fix or, change a resistor or, you know. Some things are just, man, they're like so fundamental to like the architecture of your design. It's just like, that's going to change everything, you know?
Exactly.
So, yeah.
Yep. Beware. The other thing is, you know, USB power delivery. You've heard me crap on about that before.
Well, of course. Yeah.
You know, you think that's easy. No. It's not. It's a nightmare. Mm. It's an absolute design nightmare.
I have to feel that's getting better, though. Like, there's more chipsets that are out there for now, right?
It probably is. Yeah. Yeah. And once again, there's that large stack problem. Yes. You know, sure. ST offer a, you know, a Bluetooth, offer a power delivery system, but it's like,
Dave, it's all the same.
But it's like a couple of hundred K or something, right? And it's like all or nothing. You've got to use the whole lot.
100K dollars or?
No, as in 100K of memory just okay. for implementing, you know, it's insane. Right? It's just, yeah, it's just crazy. So you can't use a small, simple micro to do USB power delivery, you know?
Mm, yeah.
It's just,
Yeah, I think that's one thing I've been thinking about too, is just like the, so I think that being a later adopter, as is my goal in life, you get benefits of like, you know, so as die shrinks happen or as firmware gets more, you know, mm-hmm. like the Bluetooth, I think the soft device that I'm using is like the version 7.0 or 7.1 or something like that. It's like very, very mature, at least in yeah. terms of the Nordic stuff. And it's like, I'm benefiting from all of the heartache that happened and heartburn that happened from people that were using the 1.0 standard. And I've heard people complaining about it, but now it's just gotten so mature. It's like, oh yeah, it's just a thing now. And like, and it was still hard for me, but me as a solo engineer, I can actually implement it versus needing a team of like six people and like, yeah. you know, long nights in the lab to try and get this thing working. I think maybe with the power delivery stuff too, it's like more chipsets are coming out. And so it's going to get easier to do that sort of thing, but it's just a matter of maybe buying a more integrated part or, you know, reevaluating, like, you know, like it becomes a system design problem. And like you are not, you know, for the stuff you work on, you're not going to go back and rip everything up, but someone who's starting a new design might benefit from the new chipset and just leapfrog a little bit in that way, you know?
Yep. Agreed.
Sucks. Yeah. Electronics.
Can we talk about something vastly simpler and to me, sure, vastly sure. more exciting?
Okay.
I just discovered this. Sorry, I don't have the name of the person who alerted me to these things, but it's probably going to be today's video that I shoot mm-hmm. if I get off my ass okay. and do it. These are very exciting. I'm so super excited about this, and I'm a total nerd because it's
burying the lead, folks, burying the lead.
It's a thermal jumper.
There it is.
What is a thermal jumper, I hear you say?
Yes.
Apparently these are fairly new, hence why I've never heard of them before. Like the person who sent it to me said he did a bit of research and said, yeah, it looks like they've only come out in the last year or something. They're available from at least two manufacturers, Vishay and a company I've never heard of called American Technical Ceramics, ATC.
Yeah, that's not a great name.
ATC, but it's the engineer's choice. That's their they've stolen the tick single.
A name that only an engineer could love. How about that?
Right. I'll send you the linky to the ATC one because you won't have that. Mm-hmm. So there you go.
Okay.
What these are, right? I've done a video which we'll have to link in on doing thermal design for SMD parts, right? And it's actually mm-hmm. surprisingly tricky and hard. Right. If you yep. want to get heat out of surface mount part, well, let's look at through hole parts, right? If you've got your TO220 sure. package, right? Obviously, people have been doing this for 50 years, right?
Better screw that sucker down to a heat sink, right?
Screw that sucker down to a heat sink with some thermal paste, right? That's right. No worries, right?
Rub it on. Rub it on.
Right. But try to get heat out of a modern, you know, SMD power transistor. Right yep. in a, you know, whatever your favorite SMD package yeah. is, right? And or try and get it out of a motor driver chip with a big thermal, yeah. you know, pad on the bottom and stuff like that. Now, yep. you might think, oh, okay, no, you just tie it to the ground plane. Well, a lot of these have to be isolated, right? Mm. A lot of these yep. things they're not connected to the ground. So you can't just connect it to the ground plane. And you might think, oh, well, I can just via stitch it down to a big, you know, PCB mounted, mm-hmm. you know, thermal pad, and then maybe put one of those surface
right.
mount heat sinks on top.
Right?
Have a floating pad, effectively. Yeah. yeah, a floating pad. But hey, bingo, you've just killed your PCB layout room, right? Or you need to go to a six-layer board because you've already got four layers, two for your power, one power ground and two routing layers, and then what, you want to add another two just for a heatsink? Okay, but you know, it's going to cost you more. It might be cheaper to go to one of those SMD, one of those pick and place SMD heatsinks that you can put down, right? They're available in various scenarios and stuff like that. But the whole idea is when you go to SMD, right, you want to do everything SMD, right? That is the holy grail. Right. And you don't want to say, oh, let's mix some through-hole parts in there and, oh, I'll use a big TO220 because I need to screw it into my heatsink, right? No, you want everything pick and place.
How much could it possibly cost to just have some hand-placed, you know, hand-soldered and or wave-soldered things?
It's just, yeah, it's going to be vastly easier, cheaper, and simpler to have everything SMD. But as I said, you've got the problem with getting heat out of SMD parts. So, ta-da, these new magic thermal jumpers, they look like resistors or surface mount resistors, available in different packages, big, fat, wide ones, by the way. People argue over whether width or length is better. When it comes to thermal, I'm telling you, width. You want width, okay? Because it's...
I mean, wouldn't it just be the same surfacer or no? It's not
because it's got a longer path. It's got a longer path. So you want a wider, shorter path than a long, even if it's the same surface area. Because if you do the electrical analogy.
Yeah, I guess if you take that to extremes, right?
Well,
yeah, if you had a really long wire, that would be a much worse,
resistance, which in this case translates into the thermal equivalent, which is extra thermal conductance, right? So you get a higher thermal resistance, right? So more power dissipated. No, you want a fatter, wider, shorter part. Anyway, they're surface mount parts. You can just, pick and place. They come on a reel. You can buy them on a reel. They just pick and place and they drop down.
They look like resistors, honestly.
Like resistors, yeah. But they're actually a, they're made of a, what's the, hang on. I'll get you what they're made of in a sec.
AIN, is that it? Thermally conductive AIN substrate. I don't know what that means.
Yes, it's an aluminium nitride substrate material.
That's an L. Okay, ALN.
Yes, aluminium
lowercase
nitride.
L gets you every time.
Right. So they're made out of aluminium nitride and they're thermally conductive, but the beautiful thing is that they're electrically isolated, right? Yeah. So that you can literally put these right next to the pad that you want to get out. Say you've got a big thermal SMD package, you can put this right next to it and bingo, it's a low thermal conductivity path through to then you can get it out to a ground. So then you can connect it to your ground plane, right? Because you've already got, usually you're going for a four layer board these days for any sort of complicated design. So you've already got that big ground and power plane in there. You can use that as your heatsink. And that's what's so exciting about these things, but it's got to be electrically isolated. So that's what these things do.
You still want to send it to your heatsink. You still want to send it to your ground plane. You want to use all the copper, but you don't want to send the electrons, you're saying.
That's right. You don't want to send the electrons. You want to send the heat.
You want to send your thermions. Your
thermions. I'm sure that's a legitimate physics word.
Yeah, sure.
Thermions.
If not, it is now.
And the other thing is that they're very low capacitance. We're talking 0.1 puff or something like that, which is important if you've got high switching stuff, right? So if you've got big switching power transistors, right, operating at a meg or something like that, you don't want high capacitive parts coupled onto there either. So that can be a big deal. So yeah, I'm very excited about these things.
Can you try and paint a picture of what this looks like though? So you're going no, I get that. That actually, there's a thermal picture. I meant so you have a thing that looks like a 0603 resistor or equivalent, right? That is directly touching another component on one of the leads. Is that the idea? Or is it just touching an area, an isolated area, and then taking that to the ground plane?
The whole idea is that let's say you wanted to get heat out of an SMD resistor, right? Let's say you had a power resistor or something. You wanted to get heat out of it.
So a sense resistor of a motor driver. Okay.
Yes, a current sense resistor or something, at maximum current you design it, and it might be a 1 watt power dissipation, right? A big ass power resistor, right?
And it's got a thermal coefficient and that might change the resistance and yada, yada, yada.
Yep. So what you want to do is actually, here's where you have to change the footprint. Well, you don't have to, but you know, anyway. So you extend the footprint out so that the footprint of the resistor, so that then you connect the thermal resistor, right? Let's call it the thermal jumper. Sorry, you connect the thermal jumper directly to the pad of the resistor, right? So you essentially solder them both onto the same pad. You know, you can use separate pads and then join them with a gigantic thick track, right? Mm-hmm. But it, and then it's going to suck all of the thermions out of the, I love that word, out of the resistor. And you could do it on both sides. You could do it on both pads.
That's what I was really wondering. So it would, so like when I guess that's the thing that I was confused about, because when you think about like a heat, so say we're using that same, like a nice big sense resistor, 0.01 ohms, and it's still dumping a ton of heat or something like that. Normally, if you're going to heat sink that, you would make a physical contact with the heat sink and then maybe some thermal paste. And then that is the conductor, like through the actual package of the resistor. It sounds like now it's drawing it through the pads though.
It's got to go through the pad, whether or not that is a regular component pad or whether or not it's a power pad on the bottom of the chip or whatever it is. Yeah.
So it could be like so say that the sense resistor had an actual mounting element to a thermal pad that's not tied to a big, much bigger ground plane.
Yeah.
It might have that as, so this would maybe be the bridge from that small thermal pad.
That's
where
right.
It's just contacting the package of it versus, All right. So that's where I was getting confused.
Yep.
But that's super cool.
Obviously, this is not as good as going directly via vias down to your ground. Now, if you've got a big thermal pad, right, and you want to go down to your ground plate, this is where you need isolation, right? If you need, this is the key part about this product is it's isolated.
Yeah. And what's the volt? Is it like super high voltage too? I don't know.
I'm not sure about the standoff voltage. That'll depend on the package.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. No, 1.5 kV AC RMS.
Oh, yeah. I guess that's you're right. Good. That would depend on the creepage and clearance then.
Yeah,
of this specific part, right?
Yeah, but the actual part itself is 1.5 kilovolts. So.
Or would it be the breakdown of the material internally?
I don't know. It just says... Yeah. This is the dielectric, so that's internal. That's by definition the internal. So it says greater than 1.5 kilovolts.
Yeah, because at some voltage, everything starts to break down, right? I mean, so
everything breaks
everything,
down but... given enough voltage.
Yeah.
Oh, by the way, the term thermion is real. By the way,
is it? Oh,
yes, okay. Yes. Well, it just occurred to me. Thermionic emission is a thing. It's a it's like a valve thing. Thermionic emission. It's like elements.
Sure.
Anyway. So we absolutely butchered that.
Well, we need a new word then, but I still like thermion.
All right. Yep.
Have I ever mentioned the Hot Air Rises and Heat Sinks by Tony Cordoban?
Is it a book?
It's a book. It's a book. Sorry.
I love the title. That's just
It's actually it's like really cheeky. Like the whole book is written really cheeky.
I assume, is it about heat sinks? Because if it's
it
not,
it is. Yeah, it's about. It's basically like the front page is like, or the front of the cover of the book is just like a picture of a thermal graph drawn on a napkin with coffee and stuff. And
Oh, nice, it's great,
And but it's all like it's very, what's it called? It's totally like a story. The whole thing. So it's very narrative in that way.
Oh, that sounds
it's great.
Cool. I might get that.
Yeah. You'd probably like it.
Yes.
It's a good book.
The usual self-help recommendations you give each week, you know.
Oh, sorry. I thought you were going to say, unlike the usual equation-based books that are usually covering this topic. You know what, Dave? Whatever. Those also have stories.
No, it's just based on the title, I know it's going to be good, you know.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, yeah.
You're judging a book by its cover.
Cover. Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah.
Oh, and then the subtitle is Everything You Know About Cooling Electronics is Wrong. So it's very, very targeted.
Yep.
Anyways,
that's a good one. That sounds great.
Yeah.
Yep. Let's get that. All right. Maybe I can do a book review.
That'd be a first.
Yeah. No, technically it's not. I used to do book reviews back in the day.
Okay. Art of Electronics doesn't count, Dave. Art of Electronics
back
doesn't count.
No, I used to do a book. I used to do book reviews when I first started my channel. Yep. Yeah. Yep, used to be. I had multiple segments in the one video, and one of them was a book review. So, yeah, anyway.
The good old days.
Anyway, I love these thermal jumpers. It's like I'm just losing count of the number of designs I can think of over the years where this would have come in so handy. Really, somebody's going to jump in the comments and go, oh yeah, they've been around for a decade. I don't know. Right,
exactly.
But holy crap, you know, I just learned about them and I think they're the duck's guts. Yeah. So, and the price, tell us the price, son, because I know you want to, the in thousand of quantity, hang on, just let me enter it into the digi keys here. Thousand of quantity, about 36 cents a pop.
Well, that's not bad.
Thousand quantity.
Yeah.
It's okay. You know.
I mean, you're probably going to do not many of these, right? Unless you're having a huge board, in which case, or like a huge amount of heat in your board. But
well, yeah, as I said, just use one big fat wide one.
Yeah.
You know, or they jump up to 55 cents for the big fatties.
Okay.
So, you know.
What is your, what's like one of your examples that you could think of?
Oh, getting out of any power transistor design where I've had to in low profile stuff where normally you would sort of like have a thermal pad on top of the chip, for example, right? Yeah. You would have a thermal pad on top of the chip, and then you'd have a heatsink wedged on top of that, or you'd have the case wedged on top of that. Right. Mm-hmm. So, you know, usually like a metal case or whatever.
Yeah. Like a piece of metal just coming down and like,
yeah,
clamping it.
But of course, getting heat out of your chip via through the plastic case is pretty poor because, you know, the thermal conductivity of plastic is not great. Right. Right? So it's, you know, so you want to get it out from the pads, right? A lot of it comes out if you've got chips, it's coming out via the bond wires because they're metal bond wires, right? And they, so the die heats up, the metal bond wires heat up, the pads heat up, right? Everything heats up. So it's, and if you've got power resistors, for example, yeah, it's like I've had to, you know, I've done many times where I've had to put like little sort of like mini PCB heat sinks, like just large thermal pads.
Got it.
Hooked onto my power resistors just to get the power, you know, just to keep the temperature down.
Right. And then you wouldn't have, and then you're just dependent on radiation instead of like, you don't have any like active cooling or anything like that, right?
No, it's a radiative, you know, yeah, thing, usually, unless you got heat out the other way. I've even done designs where we've actually hermetically sealed packages where we inject them with a gas. So then the a high thermally conductive gas, which then gets the heat out to the outside can and stuff like that, you know.
Cool.
So yeah, that's, you know, that's very expensive, very specialized, you know, small quantity stuff used in the military things, but yeah, it happens, you know, when you need that specific requirement, then you go to town to do it, right? Doesn't matter how much it costs, right? Yeah, each package has to be hermetically sealed, filled with gas, then sealed, then tested, then gas tested that it doesn't leak, and, you know, has to be qualified that it can survive shock and vibration without leaking, without the gas leaking out, because if the gas leaks out, then your thermal conductivity goes to buggery and the circuitry just cooks itself, you know, because it can't get the heat out, right? And it's just, it's a nightmare. But there, as I said, like having that isolated thermal, those large thermal pads, it kills your PCB layout, you know? It's just really annoying.
Yeah, right. It's like a keep-out zone at that point, right? I mean, you just got to go around it, yeah.
Yeah, it's just got to go around it. It ruins your, you know, your layout density. And to be able to put in one of these small parts and then just get it isolated down to your ground plane, wow, you know, ground or power, doesn't matter.
Yeah, right.
Wow, you know. Although, like, internal ground planes aren't the best heat sinks, right? Not exactly the most efficient because they're wedged between fiberglass, which is not
insulators,
exactly thermally conductive, right?
Yeah.
And but in the military side of things, there's many advanced manufacturing technologies in PCB design, which a lot of people don't know about because you won't get it from your JLCs, your PCB ways, you know, all those, right?
Right. You're also going to be paying for it because that's
You can get high thermally conductive graphites embedded into your PCB material. You can get thermal water channels embedded into your PCB material.
Oh, wow.
Thermal pipes, you know, like actual, not just like, you can get water pipes embedded into your PCBs. You can get just copper conductors, like big copper rods embedded into the
Like they do for like PC heat sinks and stuff like that. It's just pure copper, like on top of a Intel chip kind of thing.
Yes, yeah, and but that'll be embedded into your PCB structure, and then you'll have these large copper tabs coming out the side, and then you could mount those onto large external heat sinks. Yeah. And there's all sorts of advanced technology like that. And you have to, and if you have to ask the price, you can't afford it.
That's right.
You know, but these things are, these are real design requirements in the industry, right? Yeah. That's why these technologies exist. Because there's, and this is just another neat little part. You know, it's not for everyone. As I said, if you've just got, if you can actually connect through to ground, well, you just put vias down to ground, right? Mm-hmm. No big deal. But if it has to be isolated, wow. Sorry, I'm very excited.
Yeah, no, it's great. I mean, are you doing any, is this, are you doing power designs these days?
This is not for a current design. No,
I got it. Yeah.
No, I'm not doing a current design where, technically the micro supply, because in, I mean, in sure, my
yeah,
video,
that's what I was thinking.
Which
yeah,
will, yeah, yeah we're, which will link in. One of them was, yeah, trying to get, we designed a heatsink, mm-hmm. like a customized heatsink. I've done a video on that customized heatsink, and that had to be thermally isolated, you know, and it's like, yeah.
Yeah, I can imagine from like a, you know, a safety perspective as well, you know, you it's good to be isolated, that kind of thing. So, yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
Yes, of course. Yeah. Even if you could electrically connect it through to a heatsink, you may not want to. You know,
right. Yep.
Because it may be a high voltage. Like, you know, if you're in a high voltage power amplifier or something, you don't want the heatsink to be tied to high voltage. You know, if you've got a big switch in, you know, a big switch in, you know, high voltage mains side switcher or something like that, you know, you don't, you may not want all the heatsinks to be live, you know.
Speaking of high voltage and things I don't want to be near, I did end up watching those videos we talked about last time, the 345 kilovolt and the 34.5 kilovolt.
Yeah.
My God. Like, that is...
it's that a different
is
world.
Something. It is totally a different... I mean, like...
Yeah, yeah.
I think the interesting thing to me about it was you know, you're watching this... So if people don't remember, I'll link these videos back in again. So basically, it was a substation, this guy walking around just explaining what everything is. And what's interesting about it is he's talking through all these things, and I'm like, oh, transformer, you know, like...
Yeah,
relay effectively, you know, it's like all of these things that have these very, very common analogs that I'm like, oh yeah, I understand those, but these things are just monstrous. They're so big.
You do not understand these. You do not understand how they, you think you know how a relay works.
Well, I understand the concept. Maybe, how about this? I understand the block diagram, maybe.
And, yeah, of course.
Yeah. But like, yeah, the actual implementation, like a transformer that looks like that is nothing like I've ever seen. I mean, it's just.
No. Because it's filled with oil because it needs to, you know, it's like,
Yeah. Nothing I'm doing is filled with oil.
Yeah.
Maybe me very after like a plate of fries that I eat or something, you know, like I'm filled with oil, but that's about it.
A lot of people ask, like, you know, where are jobs in the industry and stuff like that? Power, big industry power. That is because it's not sexy. Right.
Yeah, that was the other interesting thing. That was tied to wind turbines. Right. So that was like a substation for wind turbines.
Oh yes, right. And it's just there's so much call for people knowledgeable in, you know, really high energy, high power stuff. You'll never be out of a job. Like, and they pay, you know, serious.
Right.
Money.
And the young engineers, they just go through them like you know, like matchsticks. So you know, they just burn up right away. So. They're always looking for new ones. You got to keep filling that funnel, you know, so that when Billy crossed the wires again, you're going to need a new intern.
Oh, I don't want to, definitely I'm not going to search for it and link it in, but I watched this video of this guy that was train surfing in India.
Oh God, no.
Mm-mm. Yeah, no. Somebody filmed the whole thing and he stood up and you can guess the rest. My God,
no, thank you. I mean, the internet's full of that kind of crap. I don't need
yeah,
that stuff.
No, it's, yeah, you do not want to watch it.
Yeah.
Of what
I am interested in like the, you know, so power delivery in terms of like, you know, so grid modernization in general, right? I mean, like the US has some parts that are good, but like so much of it is just, there's so many old areas and like NIMBYism, you know that term? I'm sure you do in Australia, right?
NIMBYism?
Yeah, so it's an acronym for not in my backyard. So NIMBYism is basically like people who like buy expensive properties and like don't change anything. Don't let anyone, you know, so it's like that's a NIMBY.
No, don't build a nuclear reactor in my neighborhood.
Well, yeah,
build anywhere else. Just don't.
But like
build
it could even be like don't upgrade infrastructure near me because I don't want you to change my sight lines out the backyard.
Right, yeah.
Like
of
that
course.
Kind of thing too. Yeah, yeah. And like that's problematic. Yeah. So that's kind of a problem. But there are some areas that are modern, but like there's
like the logistics of doing that have got to be insane. You know, I don't even know who would get on the show. If people have suggestions on who we would get on the show and, or if they know people, that would be very, very interesting, because that is so far afield from anything I've ever dealt with.
I tried to do that because just down the road from me here, like literally I could probably walk there, right? Mm-hmm. Is the main control headquarters for the Eastern Australia Energy Grid.
Yeah.
Right, it's the main HQ where they control it. And I said, hey, you know, I've got a big engineering channel. Can I come in?
I got a camera.
Yeah, I got a camera. And they went, no.
Yeah.
Even though I looked on their YouTube channel and they just let a whole bunch of students in to film, you know, like a month before, but no.
TikTok and, you know.
Yeah.
It's just, Dave, you should have done some dancing and then you could have gotten
right,
in.
Right, okay. Anyway, yeah. That's.
I mean, I think there are some like security risks there, and I get that. But I don't know how they would apply that unilaterally.
I gave them the opportunity to actually vet the footage before I actually released it, and they went, not just.
That's too bad.
Flat out, no.
Yeah.
And they had a whole media department. Like I talked to the head of the media outreach department, and they said, no, like, it's like, well, what are you employed
hello,
for?
Hello, I'm media. Yeah, right.
I don't understand why they have a job.
We talk to teletype operators and also weekly periodicals. Yeah. People really seem to like those. Pamphlet writers.
Right. I'm sure they'd talk to Silicon Chip, you know, if they wanted to write an article.
Oh,
on
well,
it,
yeah.
Know.
I mean, come on. You know, Silicon Chip.
Anyway. Yeah, I tweeted it because there's fires in California again, right? And the grid went down, right?
Yes. Yeah, so that's like a brownout situation. So like some of that is they actually take down the grid, I think, is a preparatory thing.
They do, but like this was like an official announcement from, you know, the energy company running or something.
PG&E is the one out there.
Or somebody. It was, you know, some sort of official, maybe a government thing. And they said, oh, you know, it's due to one of the reasons why it's going down, the grid's going down, is lack of maintenance. And I responded, and everyone's going, how do we fix this? How do we fix this? I'm going, well, hello. I don't even need to answer. Like, the issues are caused by a lack of maintenance. How do we fix it?
I thought there's some punchline here other than the obvious.
No, the obvious one is the punchline. No.
Yes, it's maintenance is the answer, right? It is the problem and the answer, yes. Yeah, no, it's true. I mean, it's...
Because you've seen that helicopter footage, right? Of the guys who actually clean the wires.
Oh, that stuff. Oh, my God. Yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
That's insane. I'd love to do that.
Oh my god, no!
Wouldn't like to do it.
So Dave's talking about is basically it's a bunch of chainsaws that dangle down from a helicopter. They're not chainsaws; they're like rotating blades. I mean, like it looks like it's just a death machine, really, and it just comes through and it just buzzes.
They're very cool as well. Like they actually trim back, you know, trees that are going to overgrow the power lines and stuff. No, I'm talking about the people who maintain the lines. Crawl out like a helicopter comes right up next to the line. They use a big stick to ground the, you know, or to
equalize the
helicopter potential. To the, you know, 300 to the 500 half a million volt line, and then they crawl out of the helicopter onto the line. They put a harness on and they go along cleaning inspecting and maintaining the lines. Wow.
Yeah.
Like yep. Like it's a piece of wire. You wouldn't think it'd need maintenance, but yeah, it does.
I mean, it's super high tensile and like, yeah, I mean, that's crazy. Yeah.
Yeah.
You would want to do that? Really? I mean, is this like your adrenaline junkie thing?
Oh yeah. Totally. Yeah. I'd love to do a helicopter drop onto a power line. That'd be fantastic.
Okay. Well, that's so if we're taking a tally here, that's one person in the current conversation that would like to do that.
I'm sure it'd take a month of training just to get approval it's not something that you could just do, you know, you'd have to take months and months of courses to, you know, to even be allowed to do that.
Yeah, have you ever heard that really bad country? Some people love it, sorry. But there's I am the lineman for the county. No.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I think I've heard that.
Oh, man. That's been like on playlist for me lately. And it's like so like, maybe it's John Denver or something like that. But I don't know.
It's
real.
Like that.
Not my shtick. But it's funny that there's like, there's like popular culture around it too, I guess. You know, like.
Right.
You know.
Anyway, that's job of the week.
Yeah, sure. That's
seriously, job of the week, power, big industrial power, electric transmission.
I always had a lot of trouble with, what was I watching the other day? Maybe it was on the, I think it was on that set of videos, but it was talking about like Delta and Y configurations and stuff like that.
Yeah.
And it's made more sense over time, but I just had like flashbacks to like the fundamentals of engineering exam.
Oh, and, yeah.
You know, they love asking about that stuff.
Like, you know, we had to, you had to learn all that, right? You had to learn your Delta Y configurations and how to, you know, do the calculations to transform between Delta and Y. Yeah. And all that sort of stuff. And it's like, yeah, I've never used it.
Well, yeah, exactly. I mean, the people like, in the power industry, of course, do. But like, yeah.
Of course. It's bread and butter. You know,
it's pretty
day,
rare when I'm not, you know, plugging something in that's not, you know, in the shape of a USB plug, you know.
No, as soon as you get to three phase, I'm actually confused, you know, like, huh? Yeah, what?
Yep.
You know, it's like,
right.
Right.
Yeah, and it's all around us, though, you know, like it's got to be. So.
Yeah, no, of course. Yeah. I just, you know. If you don't work on that stuff, it's, you know,
fades away.
DC, even AC, you know, like,
yeah,
that's a bit confusing, you know, give me DC, right?
Right, exactly. Yeah, yeah. Like I said, USB plugs, good for me, thanks.
Right, yeah.
Well, just some of the scale difference, too. I mean, like,
we're a bunch of wusses.
Well, yeah, I mean, yeah, there's that. But, like, just like the scale difference of, like, 345 kilovolts, and, you know, it's just, like, megawatts of power and all that stuff. And then, like, and then, I'm working on stuff on my bench that, like, if I scuff my feet too much and I don't put
nanowatts.
On, well, I don't put on my, you know, my wristband, you know, I pop it
it's
with,
dead.
It's gonzo, you know. So, yeah.
Yeah.
Speaking of bench, how did the move end up? I guess we didn't get an update on that.
And it's still not complete because there were a couple of last minute boxes that came out that I had to clear out like at the last minute and they went here. I've yet to sort them. So there's still a few boxes on the ground, but I got my underbench storage.
Yeah, I saw that.
I've done
a
video on
that,
you know. Yep. You know, it cost a pretty penny, but I for those who don't know, like you've no doubt seen, I keep most things in tubs. Right.
Yeah.
But tubs are annoying because they've got lids and they stack on top of each other. So to get something, you know, and Murphy's law of tubs means that the thing you want is right at the back and right at the bottom tub.
Right.
So you've got to take them all out and you've got it. Yeah. Right. So it's annoying. So I thought, no, for like everyday use stuff that I just need to pull, like test leads and stuff, right? That I need little adaptery things and other little gadgets that I need to like pull out every day. I wanted a nice shelf in open trays that I just pull out the tray and there it is, right?
Yeah.
It's just no taking off lids, no doing anything. It's just, you know, so I custom designed these flat pack storage units with these tubs and very nice.
Yeah, it looked nice. Yeah.
But I haven't sorted them yet, so yeah.
Well, I mean, that's the thing. Like when you like...
That's like a weekend thing.
Yeah, when you pick up on that, right? You got to like, you know, put on a movie in the background and like, you know, just
you got to put a podcast on in the background and, you know, it's one of those I don't want to do it during like productive daylight hours kind of thing, you know, during work hours. That's kind of like a nighttime or a weekend kind of thing.
No, I was in the exact same spot well, not the exact same spot. Obviously, the scale was much different, but like I just moved all my stuff from my desk at MHub because I'm just going down to like just the you know, the shared area.
So you're not at MHub anymore, you're Gonski?
Well, I can go in, but I don't like have all my stuff there anymore. It's
right.
At home now. And so
you don't actually, so you're not paying for a workbench there anymore?
Yeah, I'm not paying for like a permanent bench, but I'm still like paying to access equipment and stuff.
Oh,
like that.
You're paying for the regular access, the regular pleb access. Right.
That's right. Right.
Yep.
Not non-VIP. I can't actually, it used to be 24/7 access. Now I have to go in during working hours. Ugh, yuck.
Oh, really? Okay.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
There you go.
Yeah, so I had to make similar decisions and just, I think the forcing function was the same thing. It was like, oh, well, end of the month, got to go move all my stuff home and and refactor then. And
I started my move like 3 months ago. I thought, oh, you know, I better start now. And it was still a last minute scramble.
Yeah,
it was literally 11th hour stuff. Like I was going to dump a whole bunch of stuff. And then people turned up at like with hours to spare.
Nice.
You know, but before it was going to be tossed, and I didn't toss anything really. Everything was taken. So yeah.
That's always a tough thing too, like the sorting process and just like the some days of it. You know, I just luckily I've had some stuff laying around long enough. I'm like, oh, stuff that was like cluttering up my bench in Cleveland. I think it's time. To
right. Yeah. Yeah. You're right. How many years ago was Cleveland? You know.
Yeah, that was 4.5 years ago. So yeah.
Oh, that's that all. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. But the big thing for me is like, I think some of it is also just like mentally, like, I'm like, oh,
Chris, it's okay to leave some space unused. It will get used eventually, you know?
Yeah, right.
Yeah.
Oh boy. Yep. All right, let's get onto our list. Can we talk about this? Because it's one of these things that, you know, is like, I'm glad the service is available, but then again, I don't kind of understand where it fits into the scheme of things. It's very niche. Anyway,
I know what he's going to talk about here. Yeah, exactly. Yep.
Spark Fun a la carte, they call it. A la carte. And it's a...
Dave, your French is impeccable.
Here's the blurb at the... Point and click your way to a fully populated custom printed circuit board from SparkFun. Click here to get started now. It's like, so they will actually design your board for you.
Yep.
Am I right? Because it's kind of.
Yeah. So there's another, so like basically it's a, they have all of their stuff as modules in, you know, a CAD Pro. I think they use Eagle still. And basically, I think it's like you're using, it's almost like a selector. It's like a pull down program effectively. And like there's however many branching options there are, it is a reasonable amount of things that can be hooked from one to another. And basically you're selecting all of the things that can be selected, and then it's going to auto place those and off you go. So basically it's like kind of, you know, SparkFun obviously sells a lot of great modules. They're kind of small breakouts for chips and things like that. The way I kind of think about it is like they have these boards and they're just kind of putting them all onto one board for you. And that's kind of the main thing.
Yeah. Somebody mentioned this. It's kind of like for somebody who designs a gadget for Burning Man and they don't really know anything about electronics, but they need like 20 of them and they don't want to hand wire 20 of them. And that's kind of the market for it. And that's about the only market for it, perhaps. You know, I'm exaggerating there a tad, but it's not a big market.
Right. Yeah, I think it's all low, you know, it's all low frequency, low power signals, right? So like from that side of things, it's stuff that would be just as good if you did wired point to point or through a breadboard or whatever. Like it's not like you're, you know, I don't think any of the modules are going to be anything high speed other than, you know, maybe, you know, I know one of the modules you can put on there is like a ESP. So like, yeah, that's got RF subsections on the chipset or on the module, but that's not dependent on how it's laid out.
Yep. Can you like define the size of the board, the footprint? Because like this is not a fully custom PCB design service. They are not going to design a fit to envelope PCB for you know, fancy looking, you know, smart watch for Kickstarter or something, right? That's not what this is.
Right. I agree. Yeah. I think that, you have to go to a consultant,
a real,
you know,
like PCB designer to do this. Exactly. And it's what is it, $995 or something?
Yeah, so half off for the first year, I think, or to the end of the year. Right. So, but yeah, that's
it. Sounds it's to some that sounds cheap to people who know about this sort of stuff. Yeah, if you hire a professional PCB designer, $995 is cheap, right? Yeah. But to others, it might seem, oh, so expensive, you know?
Yeah, I think it really comes down to like activation energy, right? So, like, if someone is used to buying from SparkFun and they're buying modules and they like it, they're able to hook things up and they're like, oh, look, an option to just move forward. And like you said, build 20 of a thing. And like building 20 hand-wired prototypes is not trivial. That's, you know, like a lot of things can go wrong with that.
You know?
Yeah. So like from that perspective, that's great. And I think that that's actually a great use case for the service. I think if that same person knew a little bit more about what the potential output was, you know, they would just as easily be like, I'm using these six modules from SparkFun. They'd go on Upwork or similar and be like, hey, can you take these files and mush them all on a board with this form factor? And like, it would probably be about the cost of this. But then, you know, SparkFun's going to make this board for them too. So like, there are benefits to this.
Is that included in the cost? Is making the board included in the cost? Or
no.
It's
just the
layout. This is just
I think the
layout.
The board might be, I don't know if there's a flat charge for the board. That might be included.
Because boards are dirt cheap these days.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And I think there's a price. When you go through the actual menus, there's like prices on each module, and it's a little bit less, I think, than the actual module itself that it would buy. So I'm not completely sure on that. I've gone through it like once. So
yeah, I haven't even gone through it. So
yeah, it's worth going through it. I think it's interesting.
All right.
What someone brings up in the subreddit comments is something that my friend Yoris had told me about it recently, but Gumsticks has a very advanced module. It's called Geppetto. So geppetto.gumsticks.com is like a competitor, I guess. But so I had heard about this because they already have like Raspberry Pi 4, the CM4, like we talked about, I think 2 weeks ago, the module. And then we talked about it last week with Jay as well. And it's like basically breakout boards for something like this. And it's kind of reconfigurable. It's got some 3D elements to it. And like, basically you see everything. Like this is a much more advanced version of the same kind of idea. So if you're building stuff and you're not using Raspberry Pi, or sorry, you're not using SparkFun things, then this might be a good option too. So if you're in that builder section of things. Of course, Chris is going to suggest that you should learn KiCad. You know, that would obviously be the best solution, but KiCad. You know, that's whatever. And that is, I think, the best solution, but that's actually a pretty big
Some people just don't want to. Like, yeah, exactly. It costs you more than $1,000. If your time's valuable, it costs you more than $1,000 to learn how to use KiCad, just in time. Right. Yeah. I'm actually going through this now. I've selected my controller. You're allowed to select one controller, like an Atmel or whatever it is. Then you're allowed to select components. I've selected a couple of switches and things and other modules, and then you can select connectors. And you know, it's pretty limited. I mean, it's I've only got a couple of types of connectors.
I'm trying not to judge it too much right now. You know what I mean? Like it's a new service.
Yeah, so it's a new server, and they can add things later. You know, if you add 1,000 different types of connectors, you go, okay, this is getting serious, right?
And I think one of the things that they're offering here is there's a limited ecosystem, anyways, right? It's people that are like deep in the SparkFun side of things, and so probably not most of our audience,
our audience wouldn't.
It would be interesting.
Have need for this yet because they'd actually design their own. But
I'm
sure there's a niche for it, but it's not. Yeah, it's not magic. There was quite a bit of hoopla. Oh, look, get a custom PCB design for $995. It's like, not really.
If you found someone like in a lower cost country that is doing it for $50, that's like 20 hours.
Oh, you can lay out your board for $50. Yeah.
Sorry, $50 an hour. I meant sorry.
$50 an hour.
Yeah, like $50 an hour. Like and there's some places that's going wage, and that's great, and like good engineers that will do that sort of thing. And it's like, all right, that's 20 hours. Like you could get a pretty good design in 20 hours, I think. So, but again, it's that activation design, energy. Are you going to go and source that person yourself? Deal with it. What if it goes wrong? Whereas this is probably a known thing.
Yep.
So,
but a lot of people don't know how much time and effort goes into producing a real top quality complicated PCB for a real product that requires fit to envelope design and stuff like that. You know, I've worked a month on a PCB, right?
Yeah.
And it's not because I'm slow, right? It's because there's a multitude of
one component a day, folks. That's all he'll do.
It's like
I'm taking my coffee break. I'm taking my 15.
Anyway.
Yeah.
News. Straight off the teletype from the New York Times in their New York Times font.
Oh.
Can we like yawn? It's like somebody's buying somebody, but
I don't know. I don't know what you're talking about here yet, so I'm getting there.
This is pretty big. AMD.
Oh, that.
Agrees to buy Xilinx for $35 billion in stock.
Boring.
Is there anyone left?
I know, right?
To buy? I mean, who bought Altera? IBM.
Altera. Yeah.
Who the hell bought Altera?
Intel.
Intel. That's it. Yeah. Intel. Intel bought Altera. You may have heard of them. AMD. Yeah. I just and now AMD buys Xilinx, of course. You know.
Yeah. Yeah. Pepsi battles Coke. Xilinx battles Altera. You know, like
And Intel battles AMD. It's like, okay.
RC Cola is over in the corner, just crying.
Who bought ARM?
RC Cola, do you know?
No idea about RC Cola.
Royal Crown.
No.
SoftBank had bought ARM previously.
SoftBank,
and then they sold it recently to NVIDIA.
NVIDIA, that's it, NVIDIA. Yeah. Yep, that's right. It's just, I can't keep up. We haven't been able to keep up for the last decade. Let's admit
it. I think you're right, though. It is kind of, it's big fish eating bigger fish. Well, not bigger fish eating big fish, because all the small fish have already been eaten. Yep. So.
Oh, boy. Anyway.
I don't think this impacts us. I mean, I don't use any Altera parts anyway.
No, it doesn't change. If you're a Xilinx fanboy and you use Xilinx every day, it's not going to change
Right.
anything, really. unless they get in there and sharpen their pencils and parts get deprecated and But they've got to honor existing contracts, you know. So it's not like, you know, you buy, you know, AMD buys Xilinx and then Xilinx originally had a 10-year contract to supply this part to some military vendor. It's not like AMD can go, oh, sorry. No, you, you know, you buy the baggage that comes with that.
That's right. That's right.
So,
I wonder about the emotional toll, not the emotional toll, but like the, so like, I remember like people talking about
emotional toll on the Xilinx fanboys.
Well, yeah, I mean, like, so I remember like, I think when I was at Keithley, like one of the guys told me like, oh, it'll always be Burr Brown to me, you know, like the TI. It may be TI, or maybe it was you talking about, I don't know, someone talking about that.
Yeah. I was a Burr Brown fanboy. Yeah.
Of course. Yeah. They're great parts. Right. Yeah. But like, I never really felt that. And then like, you know, now Linear Tech is a analog devices company. Well, and like, but you know, like it's just the thing, you know, and then you kind of get, you know, you get attached to it. That's really the only, I think that's the only thing that really impacts me is like, yeah, if they start, you know, like, so like Altera is, or sorry, Altera is now Intel FPGA, right? So like, or Altera Intel FPGA or whatever it is.
Yeah, they actually, yes. I don't think, did they drop the name entirely or they're in the process of dropping the name? The
I think they're well on the way to just being Intel. Right. I mean, and if you think about it, like it makes sense from a brand perspective of like, Intel's a pretty strong brand.
Oh, yeah. And whatever happened
Intel.com.
Atmel. Whatever happened to Atmel? Are they still Atmel or are they trying to rebrand a microchip parts? Because that's been a couple of years now, hasn't it?
I think so. The easy way to do it is you just search on the terms here. So I just search for Atmel and microchip.com pops up. So there is no Atmel.com anymore. It's just going to be.
Yeah, right.
It's just, you know, so like that is the modern day equivalent of how.
Are they still branding, you know. I mean, the part number is going to be the same. It's still AT, right?
And that's usually what survives. Yeah. I mean, that's how you can tell
that,
the old
usually the only thing that
TI
survives
parts,
is the part
like
number.
The BQ family and the Burr Brown stuff. And
yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
So all of that survives. So the, you know, the NAT semis and the.
Yeah, exactly. Yep.
Yep. Yep.
Yeah. Well, oh, that was LM, right? That was National Semiconductor, LM something.
Yes, LM. Yep.
Yeah. But I think eventually they're all just going to get subsumed by the main brand and
right
corporate silliness.
Yep.
Oh, to be in a big corporation again.
So if I go under Microchip here, I'd be surprised to actually see the Atmel name now. Product offerings.
Atmel Start, but that's because I think that's the actual tool that's like what comes up. But yeah, I think it's all becoming one chip. It's going to be really interesting, David. What are we going to talk about 10 years when it's just like, hey, did you see the new part from chip company?
Yeah, exactly. Oh, it's here we go. I've got it. It's just PIC and AVR. There's no mention of Atmel. It's just, they're AVR parts. So there's the PIC line and there's the AVR line of microchip parts.
Yeah.
So it's, I think that's how they've done it. So, which is smart, of course. You have to, because that's what people, it's an AVR processor. It's the AVR architecture. It's, you know, like you can't just suddenly, it's a PIC, you know, because a PIC is a different architecture to an AVR. So, oh, boy. The worlds are changing, my friend.
Oh, don't I know it, man.
We've been doing this shit for too long. It's like,
well, we have been. You know. Yeah, it's been a while. So to give an update on a long ago thing. So I'm going to be working from another location in a couple days. And you remember the Portal Lab? Portal Lab never really made it off the ground.
Yes. Yeah. Well, you know.
But I do have like a subset of different things I take with me now, and like so I have a pretty good setup that I take with me. That I'm going to be taking with me on this short trip. You know, it's like J-Link programmers and, you know, the TS-80.
Is this
and,
for a client thing? Is this a client
road
trip?
It's like an on-site thing I have to do. And having like all the measurement equipment, it's just kind of all shrunk down. And I just really like that trend. And I kind of hope that that continues. Because
Are you taking a real scope? Is there a real scope in there? Or you're
no, well, it's going to be analog discovery. But I really like those. So. Yep. I mean, and like most of the things I'm doing.
Yeah, that's not a real scope. I meant by real scope.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, there's no knobs. It's, you know, no built-in screen or anything like that. I think it's definitely a PC scope and it's low, you know, 30 megahertz. But like for what I do, it's fine.
Mm-hmm.
How would you define a real scope?
A real scope like is one that sits on your bench. Yeah. It's form factor. It sits on your bench, you know.
Yeah.
It's a square, you know, it's a rectangular box and it has a big screen and it has knobs and buttons and, you know. I would even go so I don't know if I'd use the word real, but like it may be differentiated between bench scope and PC scope. Mm. You know, a bench scope, because you can get like bench ones that are, you know, hardly, that are all touchy feely, you know. It's like the new tech one, right? Mm-hmm. Is all, you know, it's mostly touchy feely.
Oh, you mean it's like touch interface, you're saying? Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
So there's, you know, you can get more of that and less knobs.
I have an interesting like requirement where I actually really like PC scopes and PC based microscopes as well. It's kind of weird. So I use this program called Manic Time, which I don't think I've mentioned on here, but I kind of love it. Like I installed spyware on my computer for myself.
Yeah.
And it takes a screenshot every 30 seconds now. Uh-huh. And it tracks like, hey, are you looking at a browser? Are you looking at a whatever else? And so I use it for consulting, obviously, to track my time and things like that. It's like really, really useful to the point where even I could not remember what I had done in a Linux terminal. Like I'd like been typing commands in, and I was able to go back to that day 8 days ago and go to the time where it happened.
Handy.
And I could see a screenshot of the code I pulled up or the code I typed in. So that was kind of crazy. But like, the nice thing is like, so now I put my microscope into just like a, you know, on one of my screens. And then I can actually capture like, oh, I was working on that board, you know, board ABC on that day. And I can actually like see like, oh, that's what I was doing that day or whatever. And so the same thing with like scopes, I can go and like capture, not that I need that for capturing traces, but just seeing what I'm doing every day. Everything's kind of like on the screens.
It's almost like a proof of work. Show me that you, you know, you could go, well, here's an animation of 30 second screen. Oh. Here's a 1 hour animation of 30 second screenshots. Go for your life.
Oh, I have no fear of like ever proving my time. Like I can totally do that for everything I do. And that's not the reason to do it. It's really just a great program.
Yeah.
It's interesting because like that plays into then like having a, you know, having this kind of microscope versus a, you know, there's obviously many better ways to do it, but it's just it's a nice silver lining, I think.
That's our Amp Hour, dude.
Did you end up listening to the last Amp Hour or no? Is that still on your...
No, I haven't listened to it yet. That'll be a... I only put podcasts on... Yeah, that's an Organizing Lab podcast thing. Yeah.
It's a good one. I listened back to it just to hear what Jay was talking about. I definitely... It's on my list of, you know, like I think I said on the show, like my ever-growing list of things to learn, but like building my own Linux system. I'd like to do that within the next year. I think that's doable. Hold me to it, Dave.
Okay.
All right. All right. Well, good luck with your continuing lab organizational tasks.
Yeah, it's good. I handed back my keys the other day, so it's
that's the right step. Yep.
I'm enjoying saving the money. You know, I can just feel the cash washing over me now. You know, that I was pissing away before.
Can I borrow like $20? I hear you're flush right now. You know,
Yankee bucks or.
Either one's fine. Yeah.
Right. Oh, I got 20 Aussie bucks here.
Yeah. Well, all right.
Vastly superior to that cotton rubbish that you guys have got.
Yeah, I agree.
All right.
All right, man.
Catch you next time.
You just finished episode 560 of The Amp Hour, courtesy of our patrons. Join the club at patreon.com/TheAmpHour. Or if money ain't your thing, throw us an iTunes review. We love it all. A special thanks today to our corporate sponsor, Beanio, who now sell the PC Byte, grippy proby goodness for your bench.